What does that mean? Pick up line three, will you? Okay, thanks.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, a special rebroadcast of Shadow Over Long Island, a radio play concerning the possibility of a nuclear accident on Long Island. Do not panic. What you're listening to is not actually happening. Also, no need to panic. Off the Wall will not be on tonight. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm here watching this this tape be replayed for the first time in quite a while. It was first aired 21 years ago. And we have a special offer for people supporting the radio station tonight. If you give a call to 631-632-9872, you'll receive a 2-CD copy of Shadow Over Long Island, autographed by yours truly, who wrote this many years ago, as well as a WUSB T-shirt in the size of your choice. We ask that you support this radio station because your support makes broadcasts like this possible. 631-632-9872, and please call us regardless of where you are, whether you're on Long Island or someplace else in the world. Your support is what matters. It's what makes these things possible. Again, a pledge of $50 gets you a 2-CD set of Shadow Over Long Island, never before available, and a WUSB T-shirt in the size of your choice. We also have many other items for those people who choose to support this radio station on the air since 1977, causing all sorts of controversy and creativity. Again, 631-632-9872. We now return to Shadow Over Long Island.
You might as well just come in and tell me. Hello?
Hi, Glenn.
Dave. Dave, you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. I got into a bit of a scuffle with one of the guards over at the other entrance.
Great.
Yeah, they kind of pushed me away, and I dropped the phone in the process. I think the guy wanted to take it, but I was able to get it away in time.
Well, I'm glad you're okay. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Glenn. As I said, I'm over at the entrance. I started out at, and I noticed about six or seven firemen are heading this way.
They're inside the plant.
Yeah, that's right. They were heading towards the gate, and one of them was shouting something to the guard.
Help me out!
I think the fireman wants the guards to drop to open up the gate.
Well, any idea why?
No, hold on.
Get that gate open, Reed. The low back's nuts.
You can't do that. The gate has to stay shut.
I'm telling you, we need it open. I made up to get around this goddamn disaster area, and we need access.
You can't open the gate. It's against regulations.
I don't care about your regulations. You're no longer in charge here. This is an emergency situation, and we're in command. I'm ordering you off the site.
Can't do that.
Well, we're doing it. We're off the site, or you'll be arrested. I said, move!
Staying here.
Hey, search me fine. Get on the radio.
Glenn, I don't know if you could hear that, but there seems to be a conflict here between the firemen and the power plant guards. The firemen seem to want easy access to the plant from outside. The guards are more interested in keeping the gate secured.
Well, what's happening now?
Well, the firemen are walking back towards the plant. I believe they're summoning the police. The guards are also keeping the gate closed.
Okay, well, keep an eye on things out there, Dave, and don't get hurt.
I won't.
Well, now what I think. You want to say something, Jack?
Well, I'd like to try and analyze what we just heard.
Uh-huh.
I just heard a fireman describe the plant as a disaster area. Now, of course, the fireman is not a nuclear engineer, but it does appear that he is, and he sounded like he was the chief, which means that he should know when there is a dangerous situation. It appears that he is very concerned about what's going on in that plant, and I think he believes there is a very definite danger.
Yeah, well, I heard him say this is an emergency situation, so how do you take that?
It is an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. There are quite a few emergency vehicles on the scene. That in itself makes it an emergency situation. Whether or not it's an official emergency situation, that's something else.
Well, I'd like to hear a little more from the book you have with you before we go into that press conference. It should be coming up any time. Now, Jack Grady, John E. Grady, that's your full name, correct?
Yes.
Jack, you have something on the Rumor Control Center, is that true?
Well, two things, actually. I found this story a couple of months back in a New Jersey newspaper, and I brought it with me today. This comes from the Associated Press. What should you do in the event of a nuclear plant accident?
Run, I guess. No, I'm sure you have.
Try opening the phone book for Ocean County, New Jersey residents. The inside back cover of their telephone directories lists information about steps to take in the event of an emergency at the Oyster Creek Nuclear Generating Station. The full-page display informs residents and vacationers that if they hear a steady siren for 3 to 5 minutes, they are to turn to one of the 6 listed radio stations or a cable television station for instructions about what to do. It also gives the number of the rumor control hotline operated by state officials if there is such an emergency at the nuclear plant. The advertisement is a public service paid for by GPU Nuclear Corporation, which operates the Oyster Creek plant in the Forked River section of Lacey Township.
Oh, how reassuring. Does the Suffolk County phone book have such a page?
I doubt it, Glenn.
Well, all right. What else do you have, Jack?
Okay, this is from the book. Suffolk County's witnesses believe that the power companies plan to correct misinformation by establishing a rumor control center at the Emergency News Center, ENC.
I hope I can remember all these terms.
Will not work. The plan assumes that people desiring accurate information will telephone the customer relations offices or customer call boards. These entities will refer any questions they cannot answer to the ENC. Intervenor witnesses say it is unreasonable to expect the public or news media to utilize the rumor control system as an authoritative source of information. The perception of the power company as not trustworthy, not objective, and not credible will cause both public and media to seek information elsewhere. The board believes it unlikely that people would be reluctant to call the power company phone numbers in an emergency.
Is that really the point? I mean, I'm sure people are calling the power company many times over right now, so I guess I actually agree with what these people are saying. They're not reluctant to call, but I don't think anyone can deny that they're reluctant to believe whatever it is they're being told by the power company. And look who it is. Ann Leibovitz, leader of the Long Island Anti-Nuclear Coalition, in our studios. And I'm not surprised at all. I was expecting to see her face at some point.
Hi, Glenn. Jack? Boy, there's a lot of excitement out there.
What's going on out there right now, Ann?
Oh, it's crowded. It's crowded everywhere and getting worse. And I live in St. James, which isn't all that close to the plant.
But considering all things, it's not all that far either, is it?
No, it's not far enough. I don't know. All of Long Island isn't really far enough away from that plant.
What are your impressions of what's happening around us?
Well, Glenn, we're getting the usual lack of information about a very serious incident. I'm sure at this very moment the executive board of the power company is all of its best storytellers thinking up some good tales to tell the public.
So we're going to get the truth from the public relations people.
Well, you heard what happened when your reporter tried to get the truth.
Yeah, I heard.
And I couldn't believe that. I was driving when I heard it. It made me so angry.
Well, we were pretty upset up here, too, understandably. And, what do you think is going to happen at this press conference coming up?
Well, I think they're definitely going back to announce an evacuation. All of the evidence points to it, and I honestly don't see how it's going to work.
Well, that's what you've been saying for years now, throughout all the battles over whether that plant should be built at all.
Yeah, well, I meant it. Unfortunately, too many people are about to wake up a little too late at this point.
Well, let's get to... Jack, do you have that book? Could we get back to some of the information in the book, please?
Okay. I'm reading a section about the evacuation sirens.
What do we know about those sirens that are all over the place, seemingly? What happens if they don't work?
Well, as a backup for the siren system, the power company plans to use vehicles equipped with public address systems and driven by route alert drivers. The county alleges that the system cannot function in 15 minutes. That the message may not be heard, or if heard, may not be understood, and that high radiation levels may lead the drivers to abandon their routes.
Wait a minute. You mean if a siren fails, the power company would send people out in trucks with a little bullhorn telling people to evacuate?
That's what I get out of it, Glenn.
All right, I believe we're ready with that press conference in Hopog. Let's go right to it now.
Glenn, we understand a press conference is about to take place. The reporters were called just a short time ago in response to an increasing flood of phone calls that have been coming into county officials' offices. We have in attendance between 20 and 30 journalists and reporters who are attempting to pick up any tidbits of information from each other as they can. The scene outside, I might add, is a form of confusion as well. People are hearing all kinds of wild rumors, and unfortunately they think we have all the answers, which of course we don't. And the crowd is about 50 or 60 people right now outside the conference room doors. And they tried to attempt to get in at one point earlier on, about 10 minutes ago. Police had to form a human barricade to keep the mob outside. And that appears to have worked for the moment. However, the mood is still tense. What? I believe we're about to get underway.
Can everyone please sit down so we can make an announcement?
Where's the county executive?
Please.
What is this? Where's the county executive?
Has anybody talked to you?
Thank you. I'm John Jacobson from the county executive's office.
We have
the following information concerning the situation at the nuclear power plant. At 11:23 this morning, there was a minor disruption in one of the main generators. Instead of activating an automatic shutdown, the disruption continued and spread to other areas within the plant. This resulted in two separate fires, one of which has caused a significant amount of damage to the core vicinity of the plant. The power company assures us that the plant has successfully gone into automatic shutdown. However, the county believes there is the possibility of slight leakage to the surrounding area. As a result, in cooperation with the power company, the county is preparing for a limited evacuation.
It's complete chaos here. In case you couldn't hear over the shouting, there has definitely been an accident at the nuclear power plant. It is unclear how serious it is. There has been a fire, two fires, at least one of which has spread to the core area, and it is believed that some radiation has leaked from the plant. As a result, the county has announced what it called a limited 5-mile evacuation. That is the only information we have been given. Until I can get someone to answer some questions, there's really nothing else to report. Again, there has been a serious accident at the nuclear power plant. An evacuation order is in effect. That's all I have.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, New York. Do not panic. There is not actually a nuclear accident happening on Long Island. This is a rebroadcast of Shadow Over Long Island, a radio play that we presented back in 1985. And there are several clues that we're listening to something rather old, among them teletype noise. Haven't heard that in years. The in-band signaling of the phone company, which... you might recognize as those little chirps and tweeps when people hang up sometimes. And just the fact that the phones are ringing with bells instead of with electronic gizmos. Little things like that. Plus the fact that there is no nuclear power plant on Long Island anymore. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday night, Halloween. We're preempting off the wall for this special rebroadcast of Shadow Over Long Island. Dave Klein joins me.
Yeah, I'm here with Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm in one channel only. I don't know if you noticed that.
Why are you in one
channel
only?
I'm not in the right
only?
Channel. The right side of my mouth doesn't work. I'm not fork-tongued anymore. I'm
okay,
only left-side
well,
tongued.
This truly is an emergency. It's something to panic over that you
I have to say that last bit there with that evacuation was very well acted. That sounded very real, very, very well done. Whereas the clutter of people in a news conference, press conference, when it's not so structured, when everyone's trying to get their question out and it seems pressing, seemed really well acted, really well done.
We did that scene right here at the radio station across the hall in one of the classrooms. What we did was we gathered a whole bunch of people together, and we just had a few reporter people that would ask questions. We had the spokesperson, the late Doug Delmar, was the spokesperson for the Long Island, we never called it the Long Island Lighting Company. It was always the Power Authority. It was something based on reality, but not meant to be real itself. We never actually named the nuclear power plant. We never actually named the county executive.
Was that to make it more general? Was that out of fear of reprisal or liability?
A little bit of both. This was new ground for us. And it was something that we had never attempted before, kind of, you know, War of the Worlds tradition. So we were a bit nervous to how it would be received. It was received very well, considering the apprehension that the public was going through at the time with the possible licensing of the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. And something that we just remembered a couple of minutes before going on air was that this predated Chernobyl by a year. This aired.
Yeah, so
a year
it was something that but it did come after, as you said, Three Mile Island.
Yeah, TMI happened in 1979, but
we broadcast this in 85, and then in 86 was Chernobyl.
Yeah, and I think we broadcast it after that as well.
Did you? Good. Another thing I was thinking of during that whole like evacuation scene, besides how well it was acted, I'm thinking I'm here in the studio with Emmanuel Goldstein. Now, if there was to be an evacuation, everybody would go west because that's way off the island. I'm sitting here in the studio with probably the one person who would go east.
Oh yeah,
you'd probably go into the accident to know what's going on.
I'd have to see what's going on and just to know that we're not being – that it's not another radio play. Yeah, that we'd have to
So everybody
believe.
Going west and Emmanuel Goldstein be the one person going east, going kind of like against the grain, which is how I consider WUSB is doing, going like against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to keep that kind of philosophy going where people can actually think outside the box, go against the grain, try something different, do a radio play instead of just, you know, your basic entertainment, you're going to have to pledge your support to keep a station like this going against the grain.
That was smooth. Yeah. It's very important that people realize this. This was a collaborative effort for WUSB. And we do things like this every now and then, but we only do it because the radio station is here, and the radio station is here because people like you call and support us and keep this place going so we can do creative things like that. Go around the dial and find another radio station that would dare to do something like this in the first place. Find a place where you can walk into off the street and be encouraged to do this kind of creative project. And that's what this place is. That's what WUSB is and has been since 1977.
I love the way Newton Robb used to word it in terms of Lister Show. This station, you know, Lister Show and the station in general, it excites createment. It doesn't create excitement. It excites createment.
Createment?
It,
is
like,
that even a
yeah.
word?
It's kind of like it electrifies
we
you to create
words.
Something.
We create words at this radio station.
But it does. The station kind of electrifies people to create something. It excites createment.
631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. We have a special deal with a two-CD set, a complete Shadow Over Long Island, available to the public for the first time. And unlike what you're hearing tonight, without us talking all over it and begging for money. If that means something to you, if that's something you would like to have, please give us a call for a pledge of $50. You'll get that autographed CD set in addition to a WUSB T-shirt. And it will be autographed by yours truly. I was the person behind this whole project in the first place. I'm guilty as charged.
So now I do have some questions thinking back then. I mean, this was 85. I was 19 and a little pitcher kid who didn't really know anything.
Mm-hmm.
If we were going to evacuate, would west have been the only way to go? I mean, but we're going to get 50 people at, no, maybe 300 people at a time on the ferry? Like, what would happen?
That's one of the things that we were addressing. Where would people go? They couldn't go east, as you said. There's a scene coming up a little bit later on.
So I jumped the gun there. Sorry
about
that.
Well, no, there's actually a scene coming up with the Port Jefferson Ferry and how that might tie into an evacuation scenario. So, yeah, these were definitely issues that all of Long Island was concerned about back in 1985. And keep in mind, the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant was, I believe, 99% complete by the time the county legislature and the governor of the state of New York and pretty much all the population of Long Island rallied against it and managed to keep it from opening. 99% complete. And
who was the governor then? Was it Cuomo?
Mario Cuomo. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think if he was not around to do that, that
we would
plant,
have a nuclear power plant on Long
open.
Island right
yeah.
now.
And we were supposed to have three nuclear power plants on Long Island.
Where
were
the other two supposed to be?
Lloyd Harbor, Shoreham, and Jamesport.
Okay, so we are asking for your pledge of support. And in particular, because we stopped these things, we want double the money from people living in Lloyd Harbor, Shoreham, and Jamesport. Because you owe us. You owe us big. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think we actually stopped it, but certainly by
there was definitely a tide going that way.
By educating people, yeah. By talking about it, it provokes discussion. It provokes debate. And what the powers that be want you to do more than anything is shut up. Don't talk. Don't think. Just believe what they say and follow their orders. In the case of the Shoreham controversy, exactly the opposite happened. People stood up and questioned and demanded answers, and the answers just weren't good enough. And that's why that plant never was opened on Long Island. So I think that's a real victory for people power. Now, I know a lot of people out there think nuclear power works, and it does in some places under some managements. But let me tell you, no matter how staunchly pro-nuclear you were, that plant in that location was not going to work out. It was run in a very bad way, run by a very corrupt organization, and in a very bad location. And believe me, we're better off that plant is no longer there.
And we're better off that WUSB is still here. So if you want to pledge your support to keep it going, 1-800-394-WUSB.
Oh, you're giving me a different number now. Yeah, the 800 number.
That's right.
If people still need an 800 number, if phone calls aren't cheap enough for you today, that's another thing that's changed since 1985. It costs nothing.
800 numbers are obsolete.
Well, it costs nothing to make a phone call anymore. People can make phone calls over their computers, and it's really
and
easy.
And Eric's right. It costs us a lot, actually, when you call that 1-800 number. So, you know, if it costs you nothing to make the phone call, then please call 631-632-WUSB.
I should point out there are no calls on the line, and I have to wonder, is anybody
in the car evacuating?
Well, I hope people aren't panicking and just running around screaming. I'd like to know that people are out there, that they're appreciating the broadcast, they're enjoying this on this Halloween 2006. Please give a call, 631-632-9872. Pledge whatever you can afford. But again, if you want the Shadow of a Long Island special compilation, the pledge level for that is $50, and you'll get a nice brand-new WUSB T-shirt in addition. Yeah. 631-632-WUSB. I see one call on the line. That's great. And we have room for a few more, so please make those phone calls come in.
I also want to comment, not just the art and creativity of a radio play like this, but you know, when I mentioned that if there really was an evacuation, everybody would go west and Emmanuel Goldstein would go east, he'd go into the fray. That's journalism, folks, because you actually did that in 9/11. Everybody was evacuating New York and Emmanuel Goldstein went the other way into New York because he wanted to know what was going on.
Well,
that's journalism.
I had a show at the other radio station, too, and I didn't want to miss it. But it turned out the radio station wasn't on the air by the time I got in. But yeah, you do have to sometimes go into the belly of the beast to find out what's really going on. And I did that quite literally with the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. Using WUSB credentials, I was able to get a full tour of the inside of the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant a number of years before this broadcast aired.
And so some of that knowledge went into making the play? You kind of knew the inside
absolutely.
Of the plant?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
That and just reading the papers and talking to a lot of people, talking to people in the Shad Alliance, the anti-nuclear group that existed back then, talking to county legislators, not the entire legislature. It was something that was very big on the island back then. And I'm glad we were able to preserve it and rebroadcast it. And we just like to know that it means something to people out there. It means enough for them to give a call to 631-632-WUSB. Keep this place going so we can do things like this in the future. Radio plays, radio drama, that's magic to me because literally you can turn on the radio and just bring yourself into a world that someone has illustrated for you. It's almost like reading a book because it's not all laid out for you exactly to see how the person means for you to see it. You can think a little bit. You can create in your mind hearing certain sound effects, and it's magic. That's the magic of radio. And it used to be a lot bigger than it is now. I don't think there's any new radio plays coming out. But
No. A couple of people do that on the station. Bruce Martin does do it sometimes. And Destiny's Radio Theater, you'll sometimes get radio plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not creating them or writing them ourselves, but we do rebroadcast them and everything.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that people come together and do more of this kind of thing in the future. 631-632-WUSB. We're going to get back to Shadow Over Long Island in just a moment. Let's have one more phone call come in. I think that'll make us all really happy here at the radio station. And just think, you, the listener, you have that power to call in, make that pledge, make us happy, keep this place going.
You said this originally broadcast in 1985 and that there are clues. Those clues are very techie engineering phone type clues that not everyone's going to catch. To me, it also sounds dated because news doesn't sound that way anymore. It's very much – now, you're trying to emulate an emergency, and that's different. But even mm-hmm. when it was – before it got to the point where there was a possible evacuation emergency, the news is being done very matter-of-factly. And today, you're not going to get that, whether it be TV or radio. It's all going to be done as a way to entertain. It could even be an emergency. And news is mm-hmm. still done as a way to entertain with – if it was TV, we know about the graphics and everything. And if it was radio, they'd find the other way. And this just doesn't – this sounds like news. Like, this is what's happening.
In a way, I agree. In a way, I disagree, because whenever there's a crisis, whenever something is happening and people don't really know what's going on, 9/11 being an obvious example, but there have been many others, you see news departments go back to the way they're supposed to be, where people are making mistakes, calling in, mm-hmm. saying what they think they see and not just reading from a script. And that's what I tried to bring forth here in Shadow Over Long Island. Is the sense of uncertainty, of not knowing what's going to happen next, people making mistakes, people being disconnected, technical issues, things like that. It's very difficult. It's easy to make technical mistakes mm-hmm. when you're live. It's very hard to create technical mistakes. And that's part of the challenge of doing a broadcast like this. And I have to give amazing thanks to the people at WUSB from back in 1985 and, of course, continuing until today, just for coming together and doing all of this, because it really was a magical moment for us. And we've had a series of magical moments here at this radio station. Many, many things have happened in these walls. And I can't think of any other place where it would have been possible.
Mm-hmm. You know, where else are you going to have 12 hours of Frank Zappa or a Dylan marathon or a Grateful Dead marathon? You know, where else are you going to hear reggae and polka and punk and radio plays and cutting edge news?
We just had a hip hop marathon. We had a marathon dedicated to dead artists. Well, that wasn't dedicated to them. It was basically people who were
basically
dead.
Basically dead people came in and programmed the radio station.
What was it called? The dead...
I don't know.
Dead people... it's written down somewhere around here. Okay, well, the point is the artist had to be dead for you to play them. All right. And I think that's just incredible that, and it just gets better every year because there's so much, so many artists just, kicking off and passing to the next
honor
realm.
Of Halloween, if you want to hear a great Halloween show, you have the Tuesday Night Rock and Roll Dance Party's annual Spook Party tonight from 9 o'clock till midnight.
Dave, a phone is ringing, and they only have.
I've got to go get busy.
Why don't you go get that phone?
631-632-WUSB.
Thanks to the person calling in. Thanks to everybody who has called in. Again, that number is 631-632-WUSB. Pledge of $50 will get you the entire Shadow of the Long Island broadcast available to the public for the first time ever. Autographed by me, the writer of this particular radio play. And, you know, you don't have to get that. If you insist that I don't autograph it, I won't. I promise. And also, in addition to that, you'll get a WUSB T-shirt. Compare that. Compare that to those big stations out there that are begging for money about the same time we are. And I think it's a much better deal. Not to compete, but just to show you that we're more down-to-earth local radio station here that now happens to broadcast via the internet to the entire world. And somehow the magic continues. Okay, continuing also, we're going to be going back to Shadow Over Long Island now. 631-632-9872. There will be volunteers on duty to take your phone calls while the radio play continues. And again, do not panic. What you are hearing is not actually happening. It is a rebroadcast of a radio play from 1985 about the possibility of a nuclear accident in Long Island, New York.
Well, Glenn, news about the evacuation has spread like wildfire, and the mood at this intersection has changed quite dramatically. When we talked to you last, there were quite a few cars here. Traffic was fairly jammed, but nobody appeared to be overly distraught, and there was no sign of any panic. I'm afraid that's no longer true. In spite of the fact that there's a very visible police presence, there seems to be very little control. Many drivers are not paying attention at all to traffic signals or even lanes of oncoming traffic. within the past few minutes, we've seen those cars, about three of them, careening down the shoulder at over 40 miles an hour. There's been one minor accident here and several fights, one of which almost turned into a brawl and had to be broken up by about three or four police officers. The traffic itself appears to be moving about the same speed, which is very slow. As you can hear, though, the patience of the motorist appears to be wearing very thin.
You're on Route 25A now, is that correct? I said you're on Route 25A right now?
Yes, Glenn, that's correct. I've been moving up and down the road here and there, but for the most part, I've been in the same place, which is just east of Rocky Point.
Can you advise any motorists who might be listening what alternate routes there
well,
are,
Well, actually, I'm trying to
any?
Find out what the status is on the other roads. But anyway, for all intents and purposes, Route 25A is an alternate route already. So is North Country Road, just to the north of us. And I hear they're getting very backed up as well. Jericho Turnpike and the expressway are the primary exit routes, from what I understand.
Jim? We can't hear you above the siren, Jim. If you can hear us, we'll be getting back to you in a few moments. Again, updating the situation for our listeners, a limited 5-mile evacuation has been announced by the county because of an accident at the nuclear power plant. If you are within 5 miles of the plant, you are advised to leave the area as quickly but as safely as possible. And we're working on finding out the best ways of doing this. I believe that it's possible to evacuate to the east of the plant, in other words, heading out towards Oriette Point and the Hamptons. According to our reports, though, almost no one is doing this. Apparently, there's some confusion as to just how far the danger extends. The official evacuation, calls for a 10-mile evacuation, not a 5-mile one, as we presently have. It's still quite possible that a 10-mile evacuation will be announced, and we'll be speaking with a representative in Hopog at the county center soon about that prospect. If you recall, a couple of years back, the county had insisted on a 20-mile evacuation zone. However, the lighting company maintained that this was not necessary. I'm afraid we may be in the process of finding out what really is necessary. Bob, have you something new?
Yes, we've been in touch with several of the county officials, and many of them are saying that the 5-mile evacuation is a lot of hogwash. If there is an evacuation, it has to be a 10-mile evacuation, not a 5-mile. And it's hard to understand why a 5-mile was announced, other than, as some officials believe, it's an attempt by the county executive's office to minimize panic. A couple of others even believe that the spokesman may simply have just made a mistake when he said 5 instead of 10.
Oh, a mistake. Well, this is wonderful. What are people supposed to be doing? Are they supposed to be evacuating or not? This is not a time for mistaken intentions. We have to know.
Well, I agree with you, Glenn, and we're trying to find out. Two things, though, we'd like to ask everyone out there, not only not to call us with questions, but to stay off the phone entirely. It's taking over a minute in some cases to get a dial tone, and the circuits are really becoming very overloaded. The other thing is actually a message conveyed to me by one of the officials I spoke with.
Mm-hmm.
She urges that the general public remain calm and help each other out in all ways possible. Also, she suggested that people use carpools, and naturally enough, the more people that use one car, the less cars are going to be on the road. And it's vital that the roads do remain open for emergency vehicles at this time.
Well, we've also got another problem insofar as thousands of tourists are currently heading back to the city from the East End and the Hamptons.
That's very true.
Thus creating an even bigger traffic problem. Is there anything being done about this massive tie-up heading east? Heading west.
Well, other than the fact I know the police are considering closing off Sunrise Highway and Montauk Highway around the West Hampton area, and as far as this coming about, I really don't know how close they are to that, other than that they are considering it if things do get much worse.
Well, thanks once again, Bob. You better get back and help out with the phones, if you would. All right, and we'll check in with you.
No problem.
I think the sirens have stopped in Rocky Point now. Jim, are you still with us?
Yes, Glenn, I am.
Do you have any idea what that siren was all about?
Well, actually, that was one of those so-called nuclear sirens. It went on for about 5 cycles. and it's whipped up the vehicular frenzy on the road even more, you can imagine.
Well, does anyone know what you're supposed to do when you hear one of those sirens? I know I don't.
Well, that's exactly the problem here. Nobody knows what it means. I assume it's kind of an announcement of the evacuation. But for someone who wasn't listening to a radio, well, I don't know what they think.
Jim, let's assume that more than a few people are listening to you in this traffic jam. Maybe you can address them somehow. Tell them what to do, what not to do, anything.
Actually, I'm in the process of tracking down a policeman who would be much better able to do that. Right now, though, I suppose the most important thing these people should do is just not panic. We really can't confirm that there is any danger at this point. This whole thing could be a load of paranoia. I'm not saying that you shouldn't leave if you have the opportunity to, but right now it's probably safer for you to stay at home rather than risk your life on these roads.
Jim, you say you're going to try and talk with a police representative?
That's right, Glenn. Naturally, it's very hard for the police to talk to reporters at this time, but then again, this is really the only way to keep the public abreast of the situation. We should have an interview with one of these field supervisors in just a few minutes.
All right, Jim. Let us know when you're ready, all right? And please be careful. Middle of the afternoon on a Sunday. Well, folks, under normal circumstances, we'd be airing a world news summary at this time, but world news doesn't seem to be of great relevance to the people of Long Island at the moment. Here's something from the NRC addressing the issue of evacuating traffic. It says, preparatory trips before evacuation might be undertaken to reunite families or to obtain needed supplies. Work-to-home trips constitute the largest proportion of these trips if an emergency occurs during normal business hours. Roadway saturation due to evacuation traffic begins about 40 minutes after the first evacuees depart from their homes. KLD. Well, anyway, KLD estimates that 87% of work-to-home trips are completed within 40 minutes after the start of evacuation, and PRC Voorhees, interveners experts, estimates that 93% of the work-to-home trips are completed at this time. I don't know what all this means, but thus, according to the modeling that has been done by both parties, the preliminary work-to-home trip should be nearly complete by the time capacity-constrained traffic flow due to evacuation begins. Work-to-home traffic will be multi-directional in the network, whereas evacuation traffic will flow in generally westerly directions. Traffic flowing in directions that are opposite to evacuating traffic will have little impact on the evacuation unless the flows merge or cross. Traffic guides would be of assistance in preventing non-evacuating traffic from turning across heavy flows of evacuating traffic. When evacuating traffic is queued and moving slowly, evacuating traffic will likely permit other traffic to make turns because under those conditions there's no impact on overall evacuation time. Again, though, this is assuming that everything goes as planned and there's no panic and everybody knows what's going on. So far today, I don't think I've seen any of those.
Again, we're looking at a lovely work of fiction, you know? People are starting to panic, and there's just no way this nice little plan can hold up.
Okay, we have a problem here. We have the police out there directing traffic and handling the evacuation. We've got firemen that are presumably doing the same thing. We've also got these power company people handling the evacuation. And I'm just wondering how much of a grip on the situation these people have. For one thing, they really don't have experience with this kind of situation, whereas cops and firemen do. And even if they somehow manage to perform their jobs, look at where they're getting their orders from, the power company itself. I don't know, I feel pretty uncomfortable with that idea.
So did the county, Glenn. In fact, Suffolk County's witnesses believed that the public will refuse to obey power company's traffic guides for several reasons related to the power company's low public credibility. One, the low credibility of the power company will be transferred to power company employees. Two, this distrust will be exacerbated because these employees will be unable to provide helpful or meaningful information in an emergency, even if they have information. The plan requires that all information released must be reviewed by command and control personnel.
Mm. Where are they right now?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Well, number this three? Is very convenient at a time like this that they'd have the officials check it over first. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Jack.
Number three. Yeah. They will lack three important characteristics common to public servants, such as police officers. These characteristics are selection by a competitive merit-oriented system, which includes a probationary period, experience in the field, and regular feedback and self-correction. These factors will generate suspicion and distrust. Further, the guides will lack uniforms of the sort which would distinguish them as public safety personnel. Thus, they will not be perceived as having the appropriate background to lead people in an emergency.
Now, I suppose all of those reasons were proven to be invalid.
In effect, yes. The power company reasoned that traffic guides would be viewed with suspicion only if the general information about emergencies were disbelieved. Hostility does not arise toward emergency workers, regardless of their employers. Hostility towards the power company will arise only after the emergency ends.
Oh, well, is that so? Well, perhaps Jim out in Rocky Point would be willing to take a poll of the motorists on 25A to see if they feel any hostility yet?
I can't believe that. Did they really say that?
It's right here.
What about all the hostility towards them before this whole thing started? Is that supposed to now go away and not come back until it's all over? You know, it's really scary what these people are saying.
Now, how about boats? Let's say that somebody's out right now on Long Island Sound. What's that person supposed to do? How would people out there even find out about this?
Okay, the Coast Guard would be notified by commercial telephone or by FTS of an emergency requiring evacuation. The Coast Guard would then broadcast a warning on marine emergency frequencies. The Coast Guard would also dispatch two boats, one from New Haven, Connecticut, and one from Eaton's Neck, Long Island. These boats will be for, quote, marine traffic control, end quote.
You're saying would, because you're reading from the book you have there. I mean, but in actuality, they should be doing all this right now.
Correct.
Glenn, I'm speaking with Officer Tom Sperry of the police department, who is helping to coordinate the traffic flow in the Rocky Point area. Officer Sperry, how would you say it's going so far?
Well, it could be a lot worse, Jim. For the most part, the people have remained relatively calm. We haven't had any real serious problems other than the traffic being clogged.
What would you say, in what areas are the roads most heavily congested?
Well, they look congested everywhere, Jim, and in fact, just about all of 25A is one long line of cars from here just to past Riverhead. Out on the east end of the North Shore, there isn't much of a problem, and over by 347, traffic opens up quite a bit. It's everything in between that's really bad right now, and the South Shore is getting bad also.
Okay, now earlier we had been reporting that Route 25A was in the process of being closed, and in fact I witnessed several officers erecting barricades that blocked traffic in both directions. Now those barricades are gone. If we're supposed to be evacuating, why was this done to one of the evacuation routes?
Well, there was a mix-up earlier on. I don't have the details myself, but I believe we were getting the wrong information. Our officers were acting properly, however, based on the initial reports.
Are you saying that the power company gave the police false information?
I can't comment on that. I'm sorry. In situations like this, you're bound to get mix-ups.
What steps have you taken, and what steps are you considering to take to get these people moving?
We want to keep people away from the South Shore because there's even more traffic down there with all the people coming back from Montauk. We're setting up roadblocks on most of the north-south roads to keep people from going down there. And at the same time, we don't want anyone from down there coming up here because that will just add to the problem.
So, in effect, Long Island has just become cordoned off?
Well, I don't know if you want to use such a harsh word, Jim. We're just keeping people from going from one part to another. It's for everyone's good.
Well, there seems to be some confusion as to the circumference of the official evacuation zone. How many miles are you overseeing the evacuation for?
We are participating in a 10-mile evacuation. This is what we have prepared for, and we are handling it as such.
All right. Can you tell me what the borders are of those 10 miles?
Okay. On the west, the perimeter ends right around Port Jefferson, Port Jeff Station, Terryville area. And on the east of parts of Riverhead and Southampton Town, and over on the south around the Yaphank area.
Okay, now for people outside of those areas.
We urge them not to evacuate. There is no need for evacuation outside the 10-mile zone at this time.
Okay, have people been doing this?
Yes, Jim, they have, and I believe this has been responsible for most of the tie-ups. We are asking people who are not in the evacuation zone not to evacuate. We hope they listen to our appeal so that we don't have to impose further restrictions.
What kind of further restrictions to,
Well, if we can't get these people out of here, we'll have to take some type of action to restrict access to the major arteries in the non-evacuation zones.
Okay, so you're saying that the expressway and other east-west roads could be closed off outside of the evacuation zone?
Well, not closed, Jim. We don't want to give the wrong impression. The roads will be open to traffic, but not new traffic that would be entering from outside the 10-mile zone.
Okay, the county originally wanted to have a 20-mile zone instead of a 10-mile zone. And many county officials believed, and still to this day maintain, that a 20-mile zone is the only possible safe zone. With this in mind, would you consider extending the limit of cars you will allow to leave?
Now, you're asking me to play politics here, and we just don't do that. Some people believe the zone should be 20 miles, some say 40, and some say all of Long Island should evacuate. What we have been presented with is a 10-mile zone, and this is what we are prepared to deal with. We simply have to have faith in what has been decided for us.
Okay, have you had any problems getting officers to participate in the evacuation? It's long been feared that police officers would try to escape themselves rather than help others.
I can assure you that our men are out there doing their jobs, making sure the evacuation goes smoothly.
Have there been any signs of trouble, though?
Well, naturally, given the situation, tempers may be running a bit high. However, we are handling the situation.
Okay, if an officer were to come up to you and say he felt his obligation to his family was greater than his obligation to the department, would you...
I can't comment on that.
How long would you say...
Wait a second. SE2. 10-4. That's me. I gotta go.
Is there something happening we should know about?
Just some trouble a couple of miles up the road. Officer needs assistance. We'll talk to you later.
Jim?
Yeah, Glenn?
Jim, we're going to cut away from you for a few minutes. We have another reporter standing by Jefferson I'd like to hear from. Leslie Pierce is standing by over at the at Port Jefferson Harbor. Leslie, what's happening over there?
Well, Glenn, the Port Jefferson Bridgeport ferry has been swamped with calls and customers. People are seeing the ferry as a good way to get away from this mess, and we may have a problem with crowd control real soon. The ferry pulled in about 10 minutes ago, and there simply isn't room for all the people who want to get on it. Plus, a number of people who just arrived from Connecticut are refusing to get off the ferry. They just want to go back to Connecticut.
Leslie, how many people would you say are down there now?
Probably several hundred from the looks of it. A combination of county police and Port Jefferson patrol officers have formed a ring around the harbor to prevent any unauthorized people from gaining access to the boats that are moored there. Already we've had reports of at least 7 boats that have been stolen. One person was selling tickets to Connecticut via his own motorboat. The cost was $400 a person.
How's the town coping with this?
Well, Glenn, Port Jefferson is right on the edge of the 10-mile evacuation zone, so the people here aren't really sure whether they should be evacuating or not. But some people are trying. West Broadway is fairly crowded leaving town. Most of the stores in the village have closed within the last half hour. Shopkeepers are very concerned about being robbed if they aren't already concerned about the hazards of a nuclear accident. It just seems like everyone's looking to somebody else for answers and no one's got any.
We've had some of our reporters wandering around here on campus to see how the accident at the plant is affecting university operations.
And we're going to break in right here. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. What you're listening to is not actually happening. Please do not panic. You're listening to a rebroadcast of a radio play entitled Shadow Over Long Island, which was broadcast back in 1985 and dealt with the possibility of a nuclear accident on Long Island. There is no nuclear accident on Long Island. There is no nuclear power plant on Long Island. What you're listening to is fiction. We are, however, taking your pledges at the radio station. That is fact. That is not fiction. I want to thank Chris from St. James. I want to thank Michael from Winnetka, Illinois, for their generous pledges. I want to invite people to give a call to us at 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. You can get your own autographed copy of Shadow Over Long Island on two CDs, as well as a WUSB T-shirt, as our way of saying thanks for your pledge of $50. However, if you want to pledge a different amount, you're welcome to do that as well. 631-632-9872. It's Emmanuel here, and joining me is the actress who played Leslie only a few seconds ago at the Port Jefferson Ferry, Marianne Devine. How you doing?
Hey, Emmanuel.
You know, it's something. You heard this for the first time in how long? Since it aired?
Since it was on live. And actually, I have to say, we know that some people have called and expressed concern because they're looking into information about if it was real or not and what was happening. And we do empathize, and we're sorry if you were alarmed, and we're letting you know as periodically as best we can. At the same time, trying to air a radio play about a subject that was very pertinent at the time and, you know, has not left, especially for folks who experienced a tragedy 5 years ago when there was a terrible thing that happened, nuclear plants and things that can happen with them are brought to a new light now because, you know, that if something should happen. So it is in some ways as relevant as it was for different reasons. But indeed, there is no active nuclear plant on Long Island and in this area.
Therefore, a nuclear accident is highly unlikely.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, I'm kind of surprised by the number of people who have called in you know, expressing real concern over this, because obviously to me it seems apparent that this is fiction simply because of the day and time references. But I guess if you're in the process of panicking, you won't really look at that very closely.
And I have to say, as I said, I haven't heard it in since the 21 years since it's been broadcast. And I was driving, I was coming home from the gym, trying to work off the Halloween candy. And I got a little shiver when I was listening to it. And I'm in it, and I know it was a play. Uh-huh. And then even when I was driving
That's
here,
good. If you were in it and you're still shaking up.
I mean, in some ways, it just goes to show that even though we didn't have a lot of money 21 years ago, we had a big heart and real zeal as to trying to make it sound as good as possible.
We don't have a lot of money now.
No.
In fact, we have, I think, even less money now than we did.
And I have to say, I know that you had some help either from information that you got, and then there was somebody who had worked at the plant and had left, so you did have some background help. But
Wasn't that the fictitious character, the guy who worked at the plant and left? Did we really have somebody worked at the plant and left?
Yes.
I don't remember that part of it.
Yeah, he kind of helped with some of the technical writing.
We had a lot of manuals. We were pouring through manuals. In fact, part of the play is reading.
If we had an old poster. I think his name was on the original poster, so we could probably dig that out.
Probably
somewhere.
Ron Stanchfield.
Yes,
okay,
that's right.
Who it is. Yeah. It's amazing how the names come back to you, and he definitely gave us a lot of information.
And then,
that's right, he did work at the plant. Right.
There'll be title listings at the end, but Rod Ross, who was a fairly well-known voice at that time on WPKN, plays the lead, and he has a very authoritative voice. So that's why I was actually getting shivers, and a number of the people who are in the play were at USB for quite a while and had honed their radio skills. So.
Rod Ross, yeah. Now, he worked at WPKN over in Bridgeport, mm-hmm. and part of the whole process of putting this radio play together, back then when I was writing it, thinking about it, I was thinking, what voice should we use? And I was adamant that I not be in this at all. I didn't want my voice to appear in it. But I heard Rod one day on WPKN, because I did listen to the other radio station sometimes, and I just said, I want him.
Yeah.
And I got him. That's the incredible thing. That's when I realized, wow, the power of writing things, you can actually point to somebody and say, you do this part, and they'll do it.
Sure.
And to this day, I'm surprised that he agreed to it. We picked him up at the ferry station.
Paid for the ferry ride.
Paid for the round-trip ferry, and that really was something for us to do back then.
Well, and at the time, too, it was simulcast live over WPKN, which is 89.5, and WUSB. And at the time, also, we had sent messages of alert to all the police stations and the fire stations and emergency stations throughout Southern Connecticut and Nassau and Suffolk, because at that time, it was on the low-power end, and they hadn't finished testing, but Shoreham was open at the time.
Right, and that was something that was much more of a concern. I guess we didn't expect people to be as concerned as they are right now. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I think Dave took this call that somebody said was, in this day and age, you really can't be airing things like this. And I got to take exception with that because, yeah, I can sympathize if you believe that something is actually happening based on what you're listening to on the radio and that you don't pick up on the various clues that it's actually fiction. But to say that we must act differently now because you're afraid, because you've been made to feel fear based on how your government is telling you to behave. And that really is what it is. A lot of people are walking around spouting color codes and saying that we have to do various things which don't make any sense at all when you sit down and think about them. That, to me, is how creativity gets killed. And that's something that I think we have to really fight against. We're sympathetic to everything like this, but man, you got to be careful. You got to be careful how you stifle your voice and say, well, you know, if I censor myself, maybe I'll be protecting somebody else. And any kind of self-censorship, I think, is very, very harmful. Dave, you're back. You agree with that? you took one of those calls, didn't you?
Well, I was going to take the call, and I totally empathize.
There was more than one call.
I agree with what you say philosophically, but I don't think you should be saying it on the radio because you're...
I shouldn't be saying that on the radio either?
Well, the thing is, you're just only going to upset people more. I mean, she was genuinely upset for legitimate reasons.
Yes, but people get upset.
And we should not censor ourselves and not do this, but mm-hmm. No, should we put it in her face and say, well, actually, we're going to do it because that's the point.
Right. Well, listen, I just have a big problem with people saying, because of the way the world is now, we're going to not talk about this.
I actually, and it's really what took offense to that, too. I mean, I understand that the person was legitimately upset, mm-hmm. but the way you word it, people in general, in this day and age, I also, like you, take offense to, meaning everything after 9/11, I now have to act different. Well, then, you know, to steal a line from GW, then the terrorists have won, and mm-hmm. I refuse to do that. No, I live my life as free as I want to do. And don't tell me in this day and age, because that I'm not here to change my life because George Bush says things because he passes laws to make things different. You know, this is America. This is land of the free. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we keep going in this day and age, post 9/11, we'll watch one more of our rights and liberties be taken away.
It's a slippery slope. And as you can see, to this day, Shadow Over Long Island is provoking controversy and discussion. And this radio station continues to bring you all that. What we need from you, we need some phone calls. The phone lines are dead right now. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Please call us, and if you like what we're doing, if you like the kinds of things you've heard on this radio station, if you want your own CD copy of Shadow Over Long Island, please give a call to that line and pledge your support. 631-632-9872. We're going to be getting back to Shadow Over Long Island very soon, but we would like to see a couple of calls come in.
I did remember that someone else called up to say that she heard something on the radio about a leak in Shoreham, and she called up News 12 to find out what's going on, you know, referring to our radio show. And just – this is really weird, but I was thinking
– why would they call us? Why would they call News 12? If they heard it here, why wouldn't they call us first?
I don't know.
Maybe I take offense at that.
News 12 is a better news to us. I don't know. But, you know, News 12, for obvious reasons, do nothing. But what I was just thinking was, you know, a leak in Shoreham, it's really funny, this whole thing where we're thinking about Shoreham and the nuclear power plant and Shoreham and the nuclear power plant, and we fought it and got it stopped. But that's not where the actual leak was. Wasn't there, like, in Port Jeff Station where there really was a real chemical leak, which is now in people's groundwater in Port Jeff?
There was that. There were those menacing oil tanks that were in people's backyards, and then everybody was surprised when they found out that their groundwater was contaminated with oil from those very tanks. Yeah, these kinds of things happen all the time. It doesn't have to be a nuclear power plant. It can be anything that is simply put there without you being able to ask questions.
But in this day and age, you know, journalists can't go and research that because you really, you know, you don't want to be going up again. I'm just kidding. But I'm trying to say, I mean, it really
takes... No, you raise a good point because I was in the Shoreham nuclear power plant, as I mentioned before. I was able to use credentials from this radio station, from this tiny radio station in Stony Brook, to get a tour of the nuclear power plant. Do you think I could do that today?
Absolutely not.
Do you think I'd be let anywhere near a place
Absolutely
like that
not.
Today?
And also, one of the things that's in the play was when the part where the fire department is like, no, now there's a fire, now we're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, the firemen would no longer be in charge. It would be some higher government agency that would overrule the fire department. It was never that way either. That's very different.
Yeah, but firemen would rush to the scene and put themselves at risk. That's something mm-hmm. that has not changed. That's something
Thank
that we
God
have definitely
that hasn't
seen.
Changed.
And it really raises a lot of questions, this radio play, as to how people would react, what they would do, what they would be expected to do, and how all that just doesn't necessarily mesh.
But the other point I wanted to make about the worthy spills is that we need people who, in this day and age, also post 9/11, can go out there and go through the muck to get the real story and not just take what the government says carte blanche, because there really are real stories out there that can really hurt us
mm-hmm.
or help us, and you need some really good journalism to go out there and dig through it and find that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this whole idea of, like, in this day and age, you don't do that. In this day and age, there is no more, I think, real journalism or news except for, like, you know, Left of the Dial and Democracy Now! Is a shame. Because now we just want to take what the government says carte blanche, and that's the news. And that's I think, a shame.
I think there are enough people out there that don't necessarily buy into that. And that's, I think those are the people we should be hearing from. Marianne, I'd like to bring you back in. As you were one of the participants back then in 1985. Have things changed a lot in the last 21 years?
To do with what? I was actually going to talk about something else. So
well, okay. I'll, we'll quickly finish this question. But broadcasting, radio